Hey, good evening, everybody. John Henry Soto here along with George Batista, as always. Welcome to Counterparts. And generally, we have a show where we spotlight conversations with creative minds. And George and I decided to branch out into something a little bit more ambitious, something that we actually are passionate about. We'll have conversations, we'll riff, we'll ask for your advice and for you to get involved in this. And today, we're going to be talking about the destruction of melody. Is that a real thing, or did we, George and I, just start pissed off because we're two little bitches? Time to be back. So welcome back. I'm going to make another opening for our Thursday night rant. anyway, thank you everybody for tuning in. Appreciate y'all. One of the reasons why George and I decided to do this was because usually about 99.99% of the time after we finish our show and we have a wonderful guest, the guests inspire us. And it could be about health, it could be about music, it could be about film, it could be about life, anything. And it inspires us to a point where George and I start riffing, and sometimes we'll go another hour while we're planning for the next show, we're chatting, and we realize, you know what, this is actually not a bad conversation to have and to try to bring it to an audience and then to get feedback and to see what, you know, what are the, what's the viewpoint? Because George and I have... We're very much involved in music. We love music. It's the number one thing that we actually started out loving from kids. So we have that as a passion. So we always talked about music. And now that we're, you know, a little older, we have different viewpoints. But, and I'm going to ask you this, George, because I don't, you know, we have different viewpoints on what we think is a good melody and things like that. But do we? Because... I always felt that you and I were, you know, we were never really listening to what was on the radio when we were teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Mm-hmm. Think about it. I mean, we were listening to the only thing that came out when we were listening to when we were young was like the grunge stuff.
Right.
The Pearl Jam. And that was pretty much, you know, that was pretty much it.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Santana will come out with a record, you know, after Supernatural and stuff, where he became more mainstream. But I was listening to Santana way before that,
a long time.
So it was, but Santana's was not a new artist even in 91, right? He was already a veteran artist.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know, like I always felt that we enjoyed music from the, you know, the 50s, 60s, 70s, some stuff in the 80s, a lot more in the 90s, you know, and then today it's, for me, it's more, you know, things that a lot of people don't even listen to, you know, like more fusion jazz or something, or something that's a little bit more in depth. And of course, I listen to a lot of the old, you know, old classics that we like as well.
Exactly.
So, I mean, what do you think? Do you think that you've changed that because as age hit you, or because we've always had that kind of temperament when it came to music?
Well, yeah, no, I. It's kind of weird. When I was a teenager, I've been through these weird little changes, right? You know, like, again, we talked about our influences when I was younger. You know, for me, it was Kiss, you know?
Right.
You know, but they were guys that were rocking, they were playing instruments. I mean, I know they were a marketing machine, but they were still rocking out, you know? And then when I started into my teenage years, just then my taste went into more of the pop stuff. But then when we started playing, I discovered this whole other thing, right? When I really got into Rush and Zeppelin and all these guys, have been partly that was from you. And I was like, wait a minute, where's this world that I should have been in for the last, but you know, but, and then from there, I fell in love with those things. I fell in love with melody. I fell in love with all that. And then, you know, it's interesting. I was never, after that, I was never really into the
what was pops. Happening.
Yeah, what's happening now after that? Yeah. Because to me, that was the ultimate.
I agree. And if anybody's out there, if you want to chime in on what your views on that, like modern music and melody, you know, is it? And we have theories, and you know, and our theories are completely wrong, but they're going to be theories that we have that we've developed, or at least I have a couple of ideas. And I have a couple of articles that I want to actually go over as well on a couple of them, the catchiest songs, what's considered the catchiest songs based on science.
Wow.
So this gets very, it was very, very interesting article. And there's another one on the most covered songs of all time. Okay. And I thought that's an interesting thing to look at, because if we have such great music today, there'd be a lot more covers of those songs that came out, I don't know, 10 years ago, right. 15 years ago, 20 right. years ago. But yet the covers that we have are like 50 years ago, 40 years ago. So I'm gonna go over that and show and talk a little bit about that.
Absolutely.
But yeah, you're right, because I don't remember, especially somebody like, I was listening to Eric Clapton. So Eric Clapton has been pretty consistent, at least in the last 20 years. He's kind of come down a little bit from being in the pop, you know, on a pop radio. But you know, when that whole acoustic thing came out on MTV, the MTV Unplugged, you know, he kind of reached another level of success, right? Because he had been already a legend,
right?
You know, but he wasn't fully mainstream. He didn't have songs on the radio until that came out, you know? Right. So somebody says, because I asked, he said, okay, you asked for it. I cannot handle auto-tune. It really disturbs me. Oh, boy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that actually attaches. I'm glad you brought that up, because it actually, and I'm sorry we can't see your name, because sometimes Facebook blocks names of people. So I apologize. If you want to just jot your name in there so we know exactly who you are. And it says, indeed, I once was in a break with other bands. We talked about what songs each covered. One said, oh, I see. Okay. Covered a certain band, because yeah. Create songs that anyone could cover. I mean, yes, and I think that was part of the reason why this article was so interesting to me, because it kind of the songs that we're gonna talk about that a lot of people covered were not really complicated songs, you know, they were simple songs,
right?
But just going back for a second, I was listening to Clapton, I was listening to Stevie Ray Vaughan, I was listening to Santana, you know, then the grunge scene kind of came on. We found Zeppelin, and, you know, Zeppelin was a find, because, you know, when you're a teenager and you're kind of like, don't understand certain things, you know what I mean? And you hear something, and I thought that it was a new thing. I didn't know it was, you know, and as I started reaching, remember, this is not, there's no internet. I can't Google Led Zeppelin to get their whole catalog. Exactly. I had to find out that there was a catalog. And as I bought the CD or the cassettes at that time, I would look and I would, you know, say copyright like 1970. I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, so they've been around. You know, this is how you found out.
Yeah, exactly.
It's how you found out. You know, it's insane now to think about. Like Rush was another one. I found moving pictures and I'm like, oh, this is working. I'm like, wait. 1980 or 81, whatever it was, I was like, this was a long time ago, you know. Or at that point, I guess it wasn't that long ago, but you know, oh, this is Tomorrow is on. Cool. So welcome. She says, both comments me. Her name is Tomorrow, actually.
Right.
I love Rush, but it's beyond me. My former drummer told me on the way home from the show that he'd introduced me to Zeppelin. I never heard them. He said, you'll understand why they call you Meg Zeppelin. Ah, okay. I'm so glad he did. Word of mouth was all we had. That's right. That is all we had. And I heard, because I would listen to classic radio. And now Zeppelin and Rush were accidents, you know, and we talked about that in a show.
Yeah, but the Stairway to Heaven was out on the radio.
Yeah, but I don't remember it.
I remember hearing it.
Or at least I don't remember that was Zeppelin.
Exactly what it was. So when we started talking about Zeppelin at that time, I didn't connect Stairway to Heaven and Zeppelin.
Right.
But I had heard Stairway to Heaven. I mean, sometimes you would go to a store and you hear it, you know, on the speakers or whatever. But then when you get, and then I was like, oh, wait a minute. I know Stairway to Heaven.
That's that same band. Yeah.
That's the same. And then that's when that whole thing started.
Right. And it's interesting because I remember the Immigrant Song though.
That's another one that's been used a lot,
you know, for other things. But when you dive into the catalog, and I remember going to George's house with a cassette or whatever I had, it had to be a cassette. No, I think it was a CD. Maybe, I don't remember, but I said, and I remember saying, and like every song is really good. I remember saying every song is really good. And it was true. It was like every song that I would hear had something that changed me in a way, you know, that gave me something that was completely new to listen to. It wasn't what was on the radio,
right?
Which at that point, I guess, you know, early 90s, you know, was pretty safe music.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, it was safe. It was, there was nothing too scary about what was going on the radio, you know. And then I remember exactly where I was, and we talked about this also on a previous show, where I was when I first heard Nirvana for the first time. You know, and I remember I was just laying in bed, and I had always had my headphones on. That's how I slept. I slept with my music playing, and I had my headphones on, and this band came out. You know, and I was like, the hell is this? Because up to that point, if people can remember, you know, we had a lot of the hair bands that they called them, which I don't like that term for them, because they are great musicians. Those bands were great bands, you know what I mean? Now they were playing sort of like pop music ballads with a rock, you know, leather and chains, and being like, you know, and you know, heaven isn't too far away. You know, which is cool, and that's what we were listening to, you know. Yeah, and of course there were the classic stuff that we mentioned earlier, but when this Nirvana came in, it was so back to basics.
Yes,
you know, it almost felt like we can do that,
right?
It almost felt like I know what that sound is. You know, it seems very familiar to me, you know.
Well, especially coming from the electronics of the 80s, right? Everything was overproduced you know, in the 80s. Yeah. And then you come into the 90s, all of a sudden there's three guys and they're just,
you know. And not very, very low production.
Yes, exactly.
Literally very, very low production. So that was part of the, you know, that was part of our education. That's where we got melody from, you know. That's why we love melody. And you know, when we say the destruction of melody, you know, it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, and we're kind of like playing around with that. But I do have theories, you know, and I'm going to talk about it in a minute here and piss people off, but I do have a theory on why melody today is not the melody of the 70s and the 80s and the 60s. You know, I mean, we're talking about the Beatles, for instance, right? And there's two elements that I think that happened.
Go for it.
Yeah. So the 50s, you know, let's go back a little bit. Let's go to Gershwin. Let's go to Count Basie. Let's go to Miles Davis, right? These guys came up, Louis Armstrong, right? They came up, they were all about melody and music, right? What ended up happening and kind of ending that, or at least slowing it down, was rock and roll.
True. Right?
Rock and roll, three chord rock and roll. You ain't nothing but a hound dog.
Right.
And that, when that hit, it was simple. It was easy. It was very easy to market. You had a cute dude that was shaking, and the girls liked it. They played it out, and that became like the thing. And so, in a sense, that was part of the beginning.
Right.
Now, of course, I love rock and roll. You know, I'm like gonna say I love rock. So I love rock and roll, and I love what it, you know, it derived from the blues. You know, I mean, it's blues. It grew in the brews. It was brewed in the blues, and so Elvis Presley, and then the Beatles in the 60s were incredibly melodic.
Yes.
You know, they knew what the blues were. They loved those guys just as much. Mm-hmm. But they did something else. They brought melody. They yes. brought melancholy to songs. They brought the not being afraid to, there are places I mm-hmm. remember. And they weren't mm-hmm. afraid to go there.
Right.
You know what I mean? Where a lot of other bands, I think, kind of wanted to kind of take the Elvis Presley route. Mm-hmm. The Beatles kind of created another route. And that right. birthed a whole other thing of, I guess some people call it psychedelic things that happened in the 60s. There was a lot of drug experiments that also, you know, remember writing a song. I'm going to stop talking for a second, but writing a song is very intimidating mm-hmm. when you want to present it to people. Sure. And what is it that, why would you be intimidated? It's because you know, it's instant judgment, right? I mean, that's yep. what being an artist is. You have to just kind of suck it up, right?
Right.
And during that drug era, some of those psychedelic things, they really lower inhibitions, you know, mm-hmm. and people were just not afraid to take chances with the music and to do things that maybe nobody else even thought of.
Right.
And things that today people be like, you can't do that. You know, like the Beatles, you can't play that backwards. You know, you can't do that. You know, mm-hmm. you can't start a song that way, or and that became part of it.
Right.
So now here's the thing that I think that happened. Anyway, Jordan, go ahead.
Well, just to piggyback a little bit on the Beatles and that whole thing, I think what the Beatles started was the idea that you don't. Okay, so we know that when you like. When we would go to a record company, or where bands would go to a record company, they kind of had to be put into a category, right? A specific category. This is what you play. This is what all your songs should sound like. And they all need to sound similar to that to focus on one specific market or whatever it is. Well, the Beatles were the opposite of that, right? Because they did a little bit of everything. But then that birthed Zeppelin and all these other guys that were doing the same thing, right? If you listen to Zeppelin, no song of Zeppelin sounds like any other song.
Right.
And then they went into country. They went into samba. They did samba stuff. They
all went into blues-based.
Right, blues-based. But what I'm saying is they took that blues-based, but then they went a whole other direction. Own. They would do one song and all of a sudden completely break into something else, right? And I think that whole thing birthed that, where it just was a free-for-all of whatever type of music you want to make within your band.
And the record companies were not going to shoot you down. Like today, a 10-minute song like Stairway to Heaven would just not get on any record.
Well, of course. Right. Exactly.
Chop it down or make three or four songs out of that one song.
Right.
So that would actually never happen.
Right.
You know, during the 70s, there was a lot of musical expression. Now, remember, rock and roll was still new. You know, I mean, it's new. I mean, you know, people can say that the Big Bopper was probably before Elvis, mm-hmm. you know, and kind of started all that stuff. But from, like, let's say, I don't know, 54, I guess, is the famous year, right? So let's mm-hmm. say from like 54 to 77, because disco came in around that era, right? So that was really, in my opinion, where rock and roll created the framework of what's to come, mm-hmm. of everything that's to come from there. Mm-hmm. You know, then you had the late 70s where you had disco, and you had, that was a completely different, just dance kind of thing. Then we had the early 80s was a punk, right? Punk kind of came out, and that was birthed from a lot of the stuff that was happening in Europe, you know, a lot of stuff that was happening in Germany and in Europe. That kind of came to America, and they had this reggae influence. They had this rock influence. They had this pop influence, and it was this whole other element fused together that created this punk scene, I guess, right?
Yeah, that's where the Police followed.
The Police and Blondie and those kinds of the Ramones.
Yep,
you know, they came through those avenues. Never a fan of that, except the Police. I loved the Police, but I think for me it was a beginning of something changing, where melody was sort of like, it, you didn't have to have a great melodic way of expression. And I don't mean a great voice, because Bob Dylan wasn't considered a great singer, but had a lot of expression in his voice.
Right.
Jimi Hendrix, not a great singer, but a lot of expression in the voice. Same thing with the Doors and Jim Morrison. So
Jim Morrison,
right. Yeah. So the expression in the voice kind of started getting a little bit watered down as we got into the early 80s with the punk scene. Right. Then was revitalized. This is my own thing that I think about. I think about this all the time, people. Please do not hate me for saying these things.
Cancel.
And then it got revitalized with like an R&B singers started coming in. If you remember, people like Luther Vandross came in.
Yes.
Became a huge hit. Super incredible singer. Probably one of the best ever. Dionne Warwick was in there with some hits. You had Air Supply come in, all melody.
Yes.
Hall & Oates, all melody. You know, and then melody kind of came back again.
Right.
Phil Collins, mm-hmm. you know, Genesis, those guys. They were able to kind of like take this this whole rock thing and then bring melody back into it again.
True.
You know, and that's for a lot of the 80s. That's what was actually out there. You had Don Henley, you had the Eagles.
Right.
Later in the 90s, they made their comeback. But the Eagles, you know, people forget that the Eagles broke up in the 70s.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but then they were huge in the 80s.
Right.
Without ever touring or putting a record together. Then they weren't even talking. Mm-hmm. Why? Because classic radio started around the 70s.
Right.
And they started playing these classic songs. And then, you know, and I used to hear it all the time, you know, Eagles songs. So anyway, that brings us to the 80s. Go ahead, George.
I haven't gotten
into my reason yet.
Oh, okay.
Not yet.
I'm waiting for the reason.
I'm really
there's a point in here somewhere.
Yeah.
No, and I agree with you, because I mean the 80s, you had that huge explosion of melody. You had the Whitney Houstons. You had all these people, especially toward, you know, to mid to late 80s.
Also was
what
synthesizers were also
synthesizers, electronics, and all this. But then that was the era of like the big one hit wonders, right? It was a lot of one hit wonders there who were very melodic, extremely melodic. A lot of their, which I mean sometimes and honestly they, you know. I there are some of those songs that I like.
I love those songs.
They're very melodically, they're catchy. They have a hook, and you could see why it was a hit at that time.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I agree that it was good.
And the melodies are really important because you know, it's not just like I'll think of a song like Take on Me, right, by A-ha, right, which was a huge hit.
Right.
Very melodic song.
Right.
But when you break down that song, and I think George and I, we've talked about this, where you hear that acoustic version of that song when they sing it stripped down, and you hear the lyrics, man, those lyrics are heart-wrenching. I was like, I had no idea what the song was really about.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? I mean, because it was a really well-written song.
Yes.
And it had this pop element to it. But a lot of a great song, when you strip it down, is a great song.
Absolutely.
You know, it doesn't matter if you have all the pop stuff to it. If you take any the Police songs and you break those songs down.
Roxanne. There was a version of Roxanne with just a piano.
Beautiful, yeah.
You realize how beautiful the chords are of that
song.
Yeah,
yeah, like, yeah. And the melody line is just so glorious. So here's what I'm going to say. In the mid 80s, although it was there in the 70s too, but it was rap came in.
Right.
So late 70s, early 80s. I think the first time I remember hearing rap was probably closer to the mid 80s. I probably was a 14 years old or something, you know, when I first heard, maybe younger. No, I was younger, maybe about 12. I remember the first time I heard somebody go, yeah, come on, you know, the rap thing. And I loved it. You know, I mean, it was new, it was different. It was, it had a good beat to it, you know, but it was strictly for me, the club. It was strictly dancing. It was for break dancing. It was for that era. It wasn't for me to go and listen to try to learn how to do it.
Right.
Like I never listened to a rapper thinking I want to be a rapper.
Right.
Right. So as soon as money, and it's always money, unfortunately, right? I mean, record companies, and they need to survive. They want to survive, and they want to, you know, take people's money. So they have to get as much money as they possibly can with whatever is hot at the moment. We talk about it today like it's a new thing. No, that's been going on for a long time. True. You know, when there's money to be made, people will come and try to make money. So hip hop suddenly now, Run DMC is here, right? They kind of took it to the rock star level. They hooked up with Aerosmith. Then you had LL Cool J come in. Then you had Houdini, and you had all these other hip hop guys suddenly have pop hits.
Right.
True. Hits that are on the charts.
Yes.
Charting top pop records.
Right.
With absolutely no melody in the vocals.
True.
Very little melody. I shouldn't say no melody, because obviously there's, it's not all monotone, but a lot of it is really just saying words really emphatically, right?
Yes. But there was,
and that's the way it is.
Right. Well, you're talking vocally, because a lot of those records did have melodies
in the background. I'm talking about the part that we remember.
Right.
Like this conversation started because we were Friday night, it was late. I was walking home. We got down to the lane, and I was the night.
Right.
I mean, what a vocal run, right? And I'm thinking, well, we don't. That's a run that you don't really hear anymore. You don't hear runs like that anymore.
You never hear that.
You don't hear those anymore. So, and that's what started the conversation, because you know it's like that, and that's the way it is.
Right.
You know, and then all the other songs, you know, because they had some good songs. Dan, 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 dan.
Yep.
I love that song, you know what I mean? And I love Run DMC, you know. But something happened, in my opinion, with also dance music. If you remember dance, Lisa, Cult Jam, Noel, Coro.
That was freestyle.
Freestyle. And when freestyle music also came out, it had melody, but then they did away with the music. They did away with the instruments.
Correct.
Everything with keyboards and a drum machine.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And so there was this separation happening where you had punk singing, you know, much more straight, you know, the overall punk. I don't mean like the Police. I mean, because, you know, we talk about the Police as they're part of the punk scene. Yeah, they were there, but that's the Police. They're like legends. You know what I mean? They did something that was way beyond what was there. I'm talking about the mortals that were in that scene. Even the Ramones were fantastic. You know what I mean? We're talking about the overall scene where you didn't need a great vocal.
Mm-hmm.
Rap, you don't need a great vocal.
Right.
The synth music with the freestyle music, you didn't need a great vocal.
True.
You see the pattern?
Yes.
So
yes,
now we got the 80s. You don't need a great vocal to do what? To sell a lot of records.
Well, now people, it became easier,
right,
to sell a lot of records without having to actually be as creative, let's say. I mean, that was creativity, but not as creative as these people were who preceded you, who actually had to sit down and write melody lines and riffs and all these types of things.
Yeah, and it's competition too.
Yes.
You know, competition was much more fierce. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, the Beatles and the Stones, they talk about this in a lot of interviews that I've seen between them. People think that they were rivals or something. They were not rivals at all. They were actually really good friends. They used to hang out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
They would call each other to find out when they're releasing an album, and then the Stones will release an album right after that. You know, they'll give them like a week or vice versa. Now, the Stones did take a lot of ideas that the Beatles were putting out, and then they would kind of put out similar, you know, the Sgt. Pepper and their Exile album and things like that were kind of similar in the in how they looked and everything. But again, it was not any different than Herman's Hermits.
Yeah.
You know, they had a bunch of hits, and they were kind of in that, you know, in that realm. What's the other guy? Every needs a crumb. And the sky.
Oh, the Mamas and the Papas.
Mamas and the Papas.
Oh, yeah.
So they were all in this kind of bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all competing with one another.
Yes.
So if you hear a Beatles record and you're in the scene and you're coming up with stuff, you're like, oh man. If you hear Crosby, Stills, and Nash and their harmonies, the Eagles are like
the Eagles. Forget about it. Yeah. Yes.
We better work our asses off. So absolutely. People get out there and they bust their asses.
Yes.
And then it became a little easier, and you didn't have to bust your ass anymore. Right.
Correct.
All you had to do was get a break.
Yes.
You know, get a break. All you do is get a lucky break and get in the door, and then you're good to go. You know, and that became for me the 80s. Melody came in and was saved a little bit, in my opinion, by R&B.
Mm-hmm.
Whitney Houston,
right.
Luther Vandross, those cats, and some of the rock bands. You know, right. You had like the ones that the hair bands. And again, I hate calling them that. What do you call them? 80s bands? So we don't call them.
Yeah, 80s. Yeah.
Just 80s rock bands. I would say like Bon Jovi.
Mm-hmm.
Great voice. You know what I mean? John's got one of the great voices of all time. Rock, you know, rock. You had Motley Crue. You had, these were bands that were very successful at that point that had a lot of melody in their songs. So you had, what's the other one? Poison.
Poison.
People make fun of Poison, but great, great freaking singer, man.
You know
what I mean? And CC was a great guitar player.
Yes.
You know what I mean? These were really legitimate musicians, you know what I mean? And then there was a lot of other stuff thrown in there that kind of just did what everybody else was doing, which is what happens in the 50s, happened in the 60s, happened in the 70s, happened in the 80s. You can always find what's the biggest band, and you'll find five or six bands that were trying to go that route.
Well, remember the boy bands, right? It happened with the boy bands, and you know, and it, all of a sudden there was a whole. Yeah. Then it was in the 80s, right? It was Debbie Gibson.
Right.
Was the teen idol at that time. Then all of a sudden there was Tiffany, and then there was another one, and
And it, you also had like the boy bands, for instance. Well, that's been going on since the doo-wop.
True.
Right? I mean, the Temptations, the Four Tops, you know what I mean, the Fifth Dimension. They all had those kinds of boy band kind of
New Edition.
And then New Edition in the 80s.
Yes.
I saw New Edition live when I was in the Bronx, literally brand new. I mean, they were like super kids, and they were, you know, who they were playing with?
Who?
Run DMC.
Nice.
They were like, and brand new. It was like Run DMC, and you know, we heard that whole, it's like that, and that's the way. Jazzy, what's his name? Forgot his name. Guy, he passed away, unfortunately. DJ Jazzy, Jazzy Jeff.
That's the Fresh Prince.
Anyway, we'll get his name. If anybody remembers his name, remembers Run DMC's his amazing DJ. Anyway, then New Edition came in, and they sang Popcorn Love.
Yeah,
and they sang Is This the End? So people, you know, they had a good impact, you know. Mm-hmm. So this was every single time you have it, it's the same thing that happened. We can go into the 80s.
Yeah.
We have the 80s bands with a lot of hair. You're going to get a bunch of them. The hip hop came in. You're going to get a bunch of hip hop guys doing the same thing.
Right.
90s grunge came in. Nirvana came in. Seattle blew up. Yep. All the bands that were out there, you know, starting from their mother Mudbone, right? That was the original thing that kind of started it.
Yep.
Out of that came Pearl Jam.
Pearl Jam, Soundgarden.
All
these guys. Yep.
Yeah, all those guys. So and then we had the 90s, right? So my point and the reason we're saying the destruction of melody is because even if we look at all those bands and that progression, you can see that melody was not the focal point.
Correct.
Of any of those groups.
Correct.
You know what I mean? It really was not. I mean, great voices, great songs, great talent, but there was something that was lost with rock and roll, which was jazz, like actual melodies, you know, mm-hmm. not the regular pentatonic scale that we all know, which is what most music is, which is based out of the blues scale, right? Which is just a minor blues scale, which is everything that we listen to.
Right.
That was the only thing that was, that came, that continued.
Yep.
All these other musical scales and modes that were in jazz and that were just as beautiful are not there. You know, you have to go search for it. You know, the destruction of melody. I'm looking at it as not only the destruction of melody as like someone did that on purpose, but I'm saying that it's the evolution of people and the actual industry growing to the point where you didn't need to have that level of incredibleness, you know, in order to continue.
Right.
You know, Count Basie, Miles Davis, those guys were legends, and today are still considered just as legendary as they were when they were alive. And that to me was where I think the destruction happened. It happened in the sense that it was not intentional. Maybe to some degree, there's some stuff there. Some people that are purposely, if you look at the big picture, I'm not going to get into anything, but if you look at the big picture and stuff, but generally people were being motivated to play by the bands that were coming up.
Yes. Yes.
And if the quality is just, if you had the Beatles quality all the way through the 70s, you'd have a lot better songs.
Of course.
Right. If you had Led Zeppelin, if you had, you know, all these very melodic, moody, not the Moody Blues. What's the other? I always confuse the Moody Blues with Pink Floyd. with, you know, Pink Floyd, you know, very. Oh, and Queen.
Oh, of course. You can't forget Queen.
Freddie is, for me, the greatest singer in rock and roll. Like, the greatest front man in rock and roll. I mean, nobody can tell me that there's someone that's a better front man than Freddie. They can say maybe maybe you could say Mick Jagger. Maybe you could say Robert Plant. You know, you can throw these names out there, but as far as a showman, vocal abilities.
He had them both. That was the difference. He had them
both.
Yes.
And an incredible songwriter.
Yes.
A great pianist. He had a great pianist.
How do you know, John?
He was visiting once the Bronx. Great guitar player. He played guitar. A lot of people don't realize he also played guitar. And his vocal range.
Right.
His vocal range was sick. Yeah, you know what I mean? It was just unbelievable. So, I mean, for me, I can't imagine anyone else that could rival him as far as being a front man. Having the things that we're talking about right now, incredible vocal ability, skills, right? Vocal talent, incredible songs,
right?
Incredible melodies.
Yes. Yes.
I paid my dues. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're not going to beat that. You know what I mean? Bohemian, and then the harmonies that they put together, the whole group. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, but Queen, for me, those guys were melody. Those guys were melodic. The solos were melodic. Everything was melodic. You know, this is why, and we should, I'm going to get into
I was going to say, we're going to get the article. Yep.
Yeah, I forgot about the article.
Hello?
But these Thursday shows, by the way, if anybody's still, you know, if you're out there, they go a little longer because it's really our passion, and we kind of we want to break things down as much as we possibly can while we have the time here. What was I talking about? What was the last thing I said?
You were talking about Queen was melody.
What was my idea? Queen. Melody, those guys. Oh, yeah. So it's one of the reasons why when you go to Spotify or when you go to any of these platforms, those bands are still top. Correct. They're still streaming by the billions. You know what I mean? By the billions.
Yes.
They're streaming. You know what I mean? They're just like at that good. So you can add what you want to add, and I'm going to go talk about this.
No, I mean, you make some good points there.
If I keep my hat on, nobody will notice it. No, you have a good point. Go ahead. No joke.
Okay.
You gotta say like, hey, you have a good point there. Oh. If you leave your hat on, nobody will notice it.
Okay, I get it.
That's an old dad. That's an old dad joke.
Everybody. Oh god.
Because you know why? Because I'm an old dad.
Yes, you are. But yeah, no. I mean, you do make some valid points. You definitely do make some valid points on that. I mean, there's not really much I can say about it because you.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, and I have one more. Was the how people are learning is really changing. You know, there's very few channels on YouTube that will not only. I think Rick Beato is one of them. He's an actual educator.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Rick Beato is a guy who's going to break down songs and show you why it works.
Right.
What makes the song great? Right. His piece that he does. Can you imagine if we had this when we were young?
Oh,
we had Rick Beato. You know what I mean? But the internet could also be a real cheating thing. You know, it teach you how to get on TikTok and how to have a 2-minute song that was going to make you a viral and make you rich. Yeah. It's going to have guys just show you the chords and teach you how to play guitar learn how to play guitar. So you're learning how to play by the person that's teaching you. You know, teachers are important. But how did we learn how to play? We learned how to play because we were inspired by the actual musicians.
Correct.
So why is it that we have a tremendous amount of guitar players? I can right now put on into any platform and type in 10-year-old guitar player, and we're going to see the most incredible. We're going to see 10-year-olds doing Eruption, Van Halen's Eruption, note for note, without missing anything. Because it's being taught that way. So where the creativity that was originally there, that was just innate in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, now it's being watered down because we have all these great songs, right, that are still getting airplay, but then everyone is learning how to play those great songs by watching videos.
Correct.
So, and they're being, not only are they watching videos, do I think it's good? I think it in the long run, it's good because I think more people playing music is a good thing. And if you're learning how to play music, and if you want to play music, please play music. That you're really our only hope. You out there that's thinking of playing music, play music. Learn to play. Doesn't matter your age, doesn't matter what instrument you want to play. There's enough out there where you can learn how to play. That to me is more important than anything else.
Right. I agree.
But the creative portion of it also, you have to learn how to disconnect from what you're learning there to then what you're listening to yourself that inspires you so you can create your own creativity that's brand new, that's not so influenced by what you're seeing the guy playing on YouTube.
And that's part of the trap, kind of, you know, where, and I talked about it before, where musicians sometimes get into when they're starting to play, where they want to play their favorite songs, right? I was guilty of this.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to play my favorite songs on the drums and even on the guitar.
Tiptoe Through the Tulips, I think that was your first.
Yeah, exactly, right? I wanted to play these songs. And it's fine when you're learning how to play the song because, yeah, you learn a new chord, you know, blah, blah, that type of thing. You learn how the song is constructed. But then that the point of that is to take what you've learned and apply it to your own creativity.
Yeah, and come up with something that's
right. No, and perfect. I think as an art, that is lost nowadays.
It's I don't think it's lost. I think it's been diminished.
Well,
it's hard to find.
It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to, because, it's like,
but it's out there because I follow some incredible.
But that's the problem. It's out there, but you have to go out and go through all this to get it. Where in the 70s, everything was out there, right? Everything. I mean, granted it was radio, no internet and all that stuff, but I mean, you turn on the radio again, you had Zeppelin, Eagles, Clapton. You had all these people, one right after the other. You heard every single one of them, which was incredible, right? Now, it's very few and far between that you have those really good. I mean, again, there are people today that have great melodies, like the Adeles of the world.
Yeah, I was going to say Adele. I was going to say Lady Gaga.
Right? Even the
Bruno Mars.
Bruno Mars and what's her name? Alicia Keys.
You know,
brilliant, and they're great singers.
John Legend.
Right. But again, to me, there's in between, for every Adele, there's 20 artists that are not melodic.
Right.
In my opinion.
Right. Well, okay. When you look at the top 40, if you go right now and just look at the top four, or not even look at them, look at the top 10.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to see a lot.
There's not, because everything is this. Right. Everything is just straight across.
Yeah. I mean, hip hop is generally the beat, some melody. That's actually too good. Right. And then, you know, then it's spoken word is what it is.
Right. I mean, hip hop was based off of hip hop, like Will Smith. Right. Like Will Smith talked about it. Like the whole essence of hip hop going way back was the point of taking a good song and putting lyrics or putting your hip hop lyrics over that. Right. Or sampling a good melody from an old song.
Right.
And putting your stuff over it, but they're not even doing that now.
Right.
I don't hear much of that now.
Yeah. I mean, like, I can't even speak to it too much because I don't even listen to top 40 radio. Like, I don't even, you know, I listen to what, because on the, you know, I'm on in social media a lot. A lot of the stuff comes to me because I get it through the social media channels. So I'll hear stuff that's coming out, you know, and things that are new and stuff like that. But overall, you know, the melodic push, you know, it's not pushed.
No.
You know, we were just talking about David Foster right before we went on the air. I mean, this guy is a melody machine.
Yes.
Right. He is a melody machine. He is not going to mess around with what's, you know, with the trap music or hip hop music or stuff like that. Not because there's anything wrong with hip hop music. Hip hop music is humongous. It is worldwide. It is massive. And I'm happy that it is, that it's very successful. You know, we're looking at it as the melodies that are put out, the melodies, you know, that we grew up with, the idea of that you can take that those seven notes and create something that to the ear makes you feel something, but something special.
Yes.
That is what I haven't in a very, very long time. I mean, I've heard some bands here. There's a band I told you about out of Nashville called The Woods, which I really love. Very melodic and incredible harmonies, you know, just incredible. I haven't seen them live yet, but they play here live. So I've been, they do funny enough, every Tuesday night at 7 o'clock, Nashville, Eastern time, they do a live.
Okay.
And when they play live, like on the thing, and they're fantastic. So and I've seen a few others that have tremendous melodies, you know. But again, it's not pushed. It's not mainstream. It's not fully out there, you know. I mean, we do have Ed Sheeran, who I think is a great voice and melodic, and Adele, and you know, and Lady Gaga. Bruno Mars. So it's not like we're saying it's hopeless, but we're just looking at some of the songs that the Eagles put out in the 70s and Queen and the Stones, and not even so much the Stones, because the Stones were more of a blues band really, but Zeppelin and all those bands, the Beatles, and in comparison to what we're doing today, it just seems
Do you think, like, okay, so you look at people like Adele and these people that you named today, the Bruno Marses of the Bruno Mars is a little bit different because he's one of the only people, in my opinion, today that is as close to that is as close to what those bands were back then.
Right. He's kind of brought back.
He's brought that back because if you listen to his music, again, he can go from one extreme to the other.
Right. Right.
He's not
a good voice, talent, he could sing.
Yeah. I mean, one of his songs could sound like The Police and the other one could sound like some other hip hop thing.
Right.
And then one can sound like a pop thing. And, you know, he can go from one extreme
to the other. He's a music machine. I mean, he's been doing that for a long time, you know.
Correct. And he's extremely talented. I mean, he plays most of the instruments on his albums and stuff like that. But he's one of the only guys that does that. But when you look at melody today, and even when I listen to Adele, who's her singing is just off the charts.
I love it.
Right. But even her songs, I I'm going to be very honest. Okay. Even her songs don't move me like the Eagles moved me.
Well, I'd have to disagree on a few things because Adele has that song called When We Were Young.
Yes. Actually, I'll even go even further than that.
That song, every time I hear it, it's amazing.
A guy that you like that does absolutely nothing for me. Nothing. Okay.
What?
John Legend.
Oh, John Legend. Okay.
Okay. Great melodies, great musician.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, Ordinary People is like a very, very melodic song.
No, I know that, but does nothing for me.
Yeah.
You know,
it's also not the genre that you actually would.
Yeah, but it's not even that. If I hear a song that hits me, I want a song to hit me here.
So give me a song right now that would hit you. Name one song. It doesn't matter when it came out. It can be an old song from Tiny Tim to today. Anyone in between that when you heard it was like, whoa.
I'm too sexy for my shirt.
I knew it.
See? No. Okay. There's so many of them. There's so many I can name, but just off the top of my head, most of the Eagles songs. Okay. The one I'm thinking of is every time I try to walk away, kills me.
Yeah.
That song, the melody line on that song kills me. Steely Dan. Steely Dan songs, because their songs go into jazz and their songs is a mixture of like R&B, jazz, and funk.
Okay? Tomorrow is asking Barry Manilow.
Let me tell you something.
Yes,
Barry Manilow.
I don't hide it anymore.
No, Barry Manilow's songs will make me weep. I'm telling you, his ballads,
incredible song.
Matter of fact, I showed Jordan not long ago. Baby, what's that song? Could This Be the Magic? Is it?
Yes. Starts with the piano. Starts with that piano.
The melody on that is incredible. That song I can listen to, it'll melt me.
Even Mandy is a great.
Yes, but my point is that the songs today, an Adele is an amazing song, a song, you know, singer, John Legend.
When October Goes, sorry,
you know, but for some reason, their songs don't go deep enough,
right?
For me, melodically.
Yeah, I know you like it deep, so. What? That's what you're basically saying here. That's what
you're confessing. Listen, you.
But just going back to like,
I wasn't the one who was looking at Freddie's, penis. Freddie Mercury's.
A lot penis. Coming out today in this.
Anyway, go ahead. What were you saying?
For instance, like you were saying, the Eagles, right? You know, and yeah, that is part of what we were talking about. It's part of the fact that almost every single person, that every group that you mentioned, none of it was in the last like 10 years.
Well, that's the issue, isn't it? I mean, that's the problem.
The point is the issue. So, I mean, we are actually talking about the fact that the melodies that were created back 40, 50 years ago still hold today. Which again is the testament to the fact that Spotify streams 70% of it is old music. Old music being songs that are over 30 years old.
Yeah, right.
That's where Spotify makes most of their money. Yes. Why do you think these legendary artists are selling their catalog? If the music industry had no use for them because it wasn't going to make any money with somebody, they would push them aside because that's what they do. That's what they do, right? But no, they got Paul Simon's catalog. I can't remember who else, but they got a bunch of these catalogs that people sold, and they got almost $1 billion for these things, you know, $500 million, whatever it was. Totally, totally makes sense, because melody, no matter what comes down the pipeline, is always going to be the key thing.
Yes.
Melody is always going to capture people. So songs, you know, the Piano Man is always going to capture people. The Eagles, you know, and I can't tell you why. That's always going to be good.
Yes.
That's always going to be good. Stairway to Heaven and those bands. And so currently this melody is being suppressed to some degree, unless you go and search for it.
Correct.
It's been already established what good melody is, because the testament is the fact that they're still selling a billions of streams of these old artists, you know, older artists, and people are buying their catalog. So it's the industry, really. Mm-hmm. And it's and what we talked about, I think, before about artists not being developed. Remember artist developments back in the old days?
Yeah, A&R and all that.
Yeah, A&R and stuff. You know, that's not really a thing anymore. Now people go to TikTok and see who's getting the most streams and contact that person and give them a deal, squeeze out as much from them as they can. Because remember, sometimes they didn't put the work in.
Right.
They didn't put that legwork in. They only put in whatever it took to create that TikTok with that song. And maybe they do have it. Not all of them are just a one hit, you know. But my point is that they didn't put in the work, you know. And because of that, I think it changes how we perceive what new melodies are, what it should be.
Right. But another point that I was thinking that I've actually thought about before. So when you look at these older artists, all right, who are really, there are artists out there right now that you know, we've talked about that are back there who still put out albums and nobody hears them.
Right.
Because they're not played They're not in when you look at society and when you look at, you know, the top 10, they're not relevant. Right. But they're, you know, the Madonnas of the world and the Billy Joels of the, you know, not all of them are putting out albums, but some of those people are.
Right. But like, for instance, like Billy Joel hasn't put out a new music in 20 something years.
Right. Correct.
Maybe longer than that. But the reason that they're not relevant, what you were saying right there,
mm-hmm.
is because of age.
Yes. No, I agree. They're not going to appeal to the 20-year-old.
But that's the mistake.
Right. But here's my thing though. They may not appeal to them, right? Because they're old, but their music is obviously still appealing.
Correct.
Their older music is still appealing.
I think that the record labels are just not marketing. Like, I'll give you an example, is David Crosby.
Right.
David Crosby put out a record in 2020 or something, which I burned. I played it, you know, burn is on stream anyway. I played it over and over. And when you talk about melody, mm-hmm. David Crosby, what?
Mm-hmm.
He's incredible. Incredible. Right. And this record that he just did it. It's brand new. It is amazing. The melodies that he puts out and his vocal performance on this record. Who heard it?
Yeah.
It wasn't on radio. Right. But, you know, David Crosby's in, you know, in his 70s and still can perform. He's probably closer to 80 now, but, you know, that's my point. But again, the Rolling Stones are out there. They're still filling up stadiums.
Yes, filling up stadiums, but they're not putting out new
They do put out new stuff. They just had a new record out. Well, but it's not mainstream.
It's not mainstream, right.
Right. It's not mainstream. You know, they put out almost... They put out records consistently. They've been putting out records almost every other year.
But they're going to appeal to the people who...
To that audience. They have such a loyal fan base.
Exactly.
But young people go to these concerts because the Rolling Stones are a marketing machine as well. That tongue...
Multi-generational, yes.
Is you know, the same thing with... I mean, I think John Mayer joining the Dead with the Dead and Company, I think also helped the Dead... with new fans, because people that like John Mayer.
Exactly.
But even if the Dead was still going out without John Mayer, they're still filling up places. People want to see that. Why? Because the Grateful Dead, the whole image of it, it's in our culture. You know, it's deep into our everyday understanding of music. You know.
But do you think that the artists of today or of the last 10 years, moving forward in time, Do you think, like, when those older artists, the Madonnas and the Grateful Dead and those guys are long since gone, do you think these artists are going to have the same longevity that those artists have musically?
Not all of them, but I think some will.
Some will, but it's going to be a lot smaller percentage.
I think Adele will. I don't know about the band.
Right.
I don't know if the band is going to be, you know, I mean, I don't know if in 30 years, if people are going to look back and listen to Coldplay in the same way that we listen to Queen.
Or U2,
you know what I mean? U2, I think U2 was sort of the 70s, 80s. So, I mean, I would put them, you know.
But they're still out there.
They're still out there, yeah. But what I'm saying is the current bands of today, are they going to be looked at, is what you're saying.
Right.
Or bands or just artists in general. I think Bruno Mars will be. Lady Gaga will be looked at that way. Remember, time is the key thing, right? Like back in let's say mid 70s, and these records come out, we don't know if people back then were like, oh my God, this is so terrible. I mean, nobody's going to pay attention to these. They didn't have a podcast, so we don't know. But I'm sure radio stations and people were having conversations about how horrible they hated what was happening in the 70s. You know,
well, true.
And
disco came. Right. They would ask Frank Sinatra that. And
right.
He was like, his response was, I can't even understand what they're saying.
What they're saying.
He goes, maybe if they were to kind of enunciate more when they sang, I would be more interested in it.
Right. You know? Exactly. So every generation has that. But I mean, but we're going back and we're still talking about Sinatra today.
Correct.
One of the greatest, right? Yes. If not the greatest, well, definitely the greatest in that genre.
Yes.
But he's also influenced a lot of people. But can we say that he's influenced artists of today? I would say no.
Well, the only people he would have influenced who are even
Michael Bublé and
Michael Bublé and Harry Connick Jr.
Harry Connick Jr.
Been around for a while already.
Right. But I was going to say, and Harry came from his dad, who was a legend himself.
Correct,
so
correct.
He was already in. You know what I mean? So really, it's only Michael Bublé. There's that guy, Michael Feinstein.
Michael Feinstein.
Also, he's fantastic. They're all fantastic, but very, very few people are influenced directly that are on pop, you know, doing it in pop radio from Sinatra, you know.
Right.
Let me get to this article. I'm sorry.
Yeah, get to the article.
Or like listening
We're an hour in.
I'm sorry, everyone. I apologize. All right. So I want to just... The top 20 catchiest songs, according to what they call science. We all know how that goes. But this is a year-long survey, and it was put – I'm going to move my camera here for a second because I'm having trouble seeing the screen. So everybody's going to get dizzy just for a second. Museum of Science and the Industry in Manchester. How's that? Did I mess it up?
Well, it was a hat.
Hold on one second. Let me see what I look like now. All right, that's good. All right, so this article, which was written by Michelle Starr, it's an old article, so it's not new, but it's new enough for me to be interested about it. Newish, and it's actually good because it's coming into. Like, I think the last 10 years, I can't even count because the internet took over everything.
Right.
So this is like from 2014. So I picked this one because 2014 was sort of like the beginning, you know, we had the internet and everything and it was still kind of like still, but I think now it's a little bit different. We didn't have TikTok and that.
Right.
We didn't have Instagram, you know what I mean? So here are some of the songs. These are the full list of the catchiest, the 20 catchiest songs of all time. Now, this was based on this survey that was done by this university.
I'm going to say, what's the science behind that?
Well, the science behind it is that they took the chord structures, the melodies, they combined them, right?
Okay.
And they extracted what are the similarities between these songs. As far as the length, the how long the songs are, how the key of the song, the melody lines of the song, and how they match up to one another. So they did this for a year.
Okay,
you know, and it was at the Museum of Science and Industry in Manchester, UK. So it was called Hooked on Music. This is what that thing was called, mm-hmm. which contained clips from 1,000 hit songs from the past 70 years. So okay. it's got a good thing. So here's what the number I'm gonna start at the bottom because number one will just piss everybody off. So number 20 is Candle in the Wind. Great song.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Elton John. Number two is Rivers of Babylon. Boney M. Do you know who that is?
I don't recognize it.
I don't either. Devil in Disguise by Elvis Presley.
Okay.
Baby One More Time by Britney Spears.
Really?
I do like Britney, though. I know that people think I'm crazy, but I think I like her more now than I did back then. She just recorded with Elton John a really great track, by the way. A really, really good song. Karma Chameleon by Culture Club.
I remember that one.
Michael Jackson's Billie Jean makes sense.
Okay.
Backman Turner Overdrive. You Ain't Seen Nothing Yet.
Okay.
I don't even know that. Elvis Presley, It's Now or Never.
Hmm.
Hanson Mbop. Lady Gaga, Poker Face. Aerosmith, I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. The Human League, Don't You Want Me. Remember that?
Yes, I do. I used to have that record.
Yeah.
That 12-inch.
Whitney Houston, I Will Always Love You, of course.
Yes.
Great song. Michael Jackson, Beat It. Roy Orbison, Pretty Woman. ABBA, SOS. Lady Gaga, Just Dance. Survivor, Eye of the Tiger. Lou Bega, Mambo Number 5.
Oh, you got to be kidding me. I know that song.
And number one.
Wait, that was number two?
That was number two. Number one, Spice Girls, Wannabe.
Okay, you know what? This is over.
So this is the problem that we're having.
No.
That there's no order to this. The reason I wanted to bring this up was because it made no sense to me. You know what I mean? It made no sense to me. And now again, this didn't say that it was the best songs. It said it was the catchiest songs. Right? So, you know, people can walk around and say, what I want, what I really, really want. Right? The Eye of the Tiger. Right? You can hear people say that. Just beat it. Just beat it. You know, it's part of our culture, so to speak. Poker Face, Mbop has become a thing. People talk about it. But catchiest songs, per this science, the Museum of Science and Industry in Manchester has come up with that. Now, I know. So just like
I'm like speechless.
I know. It is. It doesn't make any. Produced by
BTM. Randy Bachman produced Lindsay.
Oh, Bachman. Okay. And
that's my favorite Sinatra song. Nobody cares.
Great song. Nobody cares. All right. So this next thing that I'm going to read, this is an update. This is why this is such a thing that I wanted to show. You know, like the 20, what they would, per their science, I don't know anyone else. I was trying to find somebody else who was doing something like this. And this place, they did it. They did a whole year study, 70 years of music. They did it, you know, whichever, you know, you can read the article and go into more specifics of what how they actually did it. But this is what they came up with, right? And so I took that with a grain of salt and I'm just like, all right, that's what they came up with. So now here are the 2022 update of the most covered pop songs and artists of all time. Okay, so I'm going to go down the list. So I'll start with the number 10. David Bowie. His Space Odyssey song was covered over 263 times. Say something.
Something in the way.
That's a great song right there.
Yes, it is.
Paul Simon, Bridge Over Troubled Water, covered 584 times.
Wow.
And when I get to the top of this list, I want you to tell me what's in common.
Okay.
Paul Simon, I mentioned. Carole King, You've Got a Friend, covered 388 times. Hank Williams, I'm So Lonely I Could Cry. Remember that song?
Yes.
Great song. Over 306 times covered. Mick Jagger, I Can't Get No Satisfaction, covered 351 times. Keith Richards, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. He's the same thing because they both wrote that song. Stevie Wonder, I Can't Get No Satisfaction. No, I'm just kidding. Stevie Wonder, You Are My Sunshine. I had no idea that was even that. He has so many other amazing
songs. I know.
Like Rainbow in the Sky, I thought would be.
Yes, Ribbon in the Sky.
Ribbon in the Sky. And I like the rainbow too. Ribbons and Rainbows in the Sky. He wrote that later.
Skittles.
Yeah. Skittles. yeah. You Are My Sunshine, covered over 310 times. Number three is Bob Dylan, Blowing in the Wind, close to 400 cover versions. Paul McCartney is number two, which makes sense. Top solo song. Oh, yeah. Paul McCartney. It didn't give a song, actually. That's weird. And then John Lennon is number one. Imagine. Covered over 500 times. Wow. I think Paul McCartney is here, and I think this article must have been because Yesterday, I know, is one of the most covered songs of all time.
Yes. Yeah.
I can see that. But there's a lot of other. So anyway, what does that list of the top 10 most covered artists of all time have in common?
They're all probably over 60. Right.
They definitely are over 60. You know, I think David Bowie's no longer with us. Hank Williams is no longer with us. And John Lennon is no longer with us. But as far as everyone else, I mean, Paul McCartney is number two on this list. He just turned 80.
80.
Excuse me.
Right.
Excuse me. Bob Dylan just turned 80. He's number three. Stevie Wonder is in his 70s. Keith Richards is in his 70s. Mick Jagger is in his 70s. Carole King is in her 70s. Paul Simon is in his 70s. You know what I mean? There's a missed opportunity, in my opinion. There's a missed opportunity here that the record companies are just not really looking into because they're looking at the now. They need to make the money now. They don't care about what's in the future. And these record companies back in the day were just documenting the best that they can find. And who knew that the best that they can find within those 25 years of production was the best? Because even till this day, almost every one of those every one of those artists recorded in the 70s.
Yes.
Every one of those artists was big and huge in the 70s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, 2010, 2020. We're talking about 50 years. 50 years, they're the top 10, you know.
Incredible.
So let me see. It says, what do they have in common? The songs are able to be covered. They're not difficult as Rush. They can't. Oh, that's a good point.
That is a good point.
That's a very good point. You're right.
Because you're. I mean, how many people are going to cover Pink Floyd, Rush? Right. You know what I'm saying?
You don't go to a party to hang out with friends and like, all right, guys, 2112, ready?
Right, exactly. Genesis. I mean, those songs are.
Yeah.
Extremely difficult to do. And they're not.
Yeah.
They're again, going back to it, you know, being as far as catchy also, you know, a lot of those songs are very catchy. I mean, Yesterday.
And you mentioned something earlier about being moved, you know, like I thought about that when you said that, you know, and like moved, like how have I been moved? Like I've been moved. I get moved by really, really sappy music. I'm the guy that will tear up at an insurance salesman commercial trying to sell life insurance.
That happens when you have kids, though.
Yeah, no, I don't think I know. I definitely know that it's not the case. Because I remember watching my mom. Yeah, my mom was very influential in my music taste. She was the one that gave, you know, she showed me all the right music, you know. Right. And but she also showed me musicals.
Yes.
And I'm a kid in the South Bronx. Why am I watching Fred Astaire in Top Hat? You know what I mean?
Like, right.
And watching true. Singing in the Rain with Gene Kelly, because she loved them, and I would watch them, and I got moved by those stories and those dances and the vocals and the whole arc of the storyline. I really got moved by that. You know what I mean? But it's a very, at the time I was embarrassed by it. Obviously, I'm growing up in the South Bronx. You get your ass kicked. You talk too much about, you know, tap dancing like Fred Astaire. So I didn't do much of that.
Right.
But did I go home and did I check the TV guide? Probably people don't remember, but back in the old days, we had an actual guide that came out once a week.
Yes.
And you'd go buy it. It was right at the supermarket. You pull it out and then you go see what's on.
Look to see what was on that night and then change the channel.
Change the channel. And I would actually look and find all the Jimmy Stewart films, all the Fred Astaire films, Gene Kelly films, and whatever. And I would mark them off on the TV guide. And that's what I would, that would be my.
But when I say move me, like, for again, going back to, there are those songs that I can hear them over and over.
Me too.
And they will just have that feeling. And it's funny because I will never forget, what's his name? Neil Sedaka, when they were asking him about songwriting. And he was at the piano and he's playing his, you know, and he said, every hit song has a killer chord. He said,
yeah.
And he said, and then he was demonstrating one of his songs and he hit that chord, which was like a minor chord,
yeah.
But it was so beautiful. It was like, holy cow, what made you think of going there? You know, but it's those chords and those killer sections and those things. That's what grabs me.
Yeah,
that's what makes me want to listen to that song over and over when I'm driving. I'm like,
because it creates melody.
Exactly.
It creates a change in the melody. It creates, it's a shift,
right,
in what our normal thought pattern is.
Correct.
Right. And so we're thinking, you know, this is playing like this, this is playing like this, and suddenly here comes this thing that we were not expecting,
right?
You know, and then we get that, you know, the endorphins and everything in our brains are kicking in.
Yes,
the dopamine and the dopamine pinchers, everything that's in our brain kind of comes on, and suddenly we get that feeling of like, oh man,
mm-hmm.
You know? And it's like, Neil Sedaka is like one of the great songwriters,
absolutely,
you know? Like melody writers. I mean, Jesus, you know, I mean. I haven't mentioned Paul Williams yet, but Paul Williams has a couple of songs that, like, not popular songs, but unless you know Paul Williams' material, but if you know his catalog, he's got songs in there that you're like, oh my Lord, how in the world did he come up with that? You know, right. Loneliness is actually a song that's like super, super like sad.
Mm-hmm.
But very beautiful, and the melody is incredible. You know, if I'm ever like in a lonely mood, I'll play that. But I'll be the Indian looking at the.
You want to know my one of my top number? Well, I won't say my top number one. One of my top ballads that I just every time I hear it, like it just kills me.
It's We Will the one Rock by, You.
Huh?
We Will Rock You by Queen. We will
it's the one by Boz Scaggs.
Ah, yes.
You know which one I'm talking about.
Yes, but I'm trying to. I can't remember.
It was for a movie. It was for the movie with.
I wish we could play some of these tracks here, but they'll take it down.
No, love, look what you've done to me. That's one of the greatest ballads, in my opinion, just beautiful music. And they wrote that on a weekend because they were asked to do it
there?
For the. No, no, they, he was telling the story. Him and David Foster.
Ah,
Foster. But going back to him, they came like on a Friday. They said they needed this by Monday, and he had to write this song and do this whole thing over a weekend. And they were in the studio already.
Right,
they had to do this, and literally Monday they shipped it out. Boom, for the movie. Urban Cowboy or something like, or one of those.
Oh, cowboy movies. Maybe it might have been Midnight Cowboy.
Midnight
Cowboy.
So, but that one, every time I hear it, just melts me.
That's a killer song.
Yep.
You know, but when we talk about, we obviously can see between the two articles that I brought up that there's a there's something wrong.
Yes,
correct. Right? That was correct. Like my only point I'm bringing up these
two. No, things. You're right.
There's a wrong. There's something that's incorrect. If the most covered songs of all time, and I'm by covered, we don't mean that they're covered by a lot of people that just play them. We mean that they were professionally recorded in a studio and put out as a single or as a cut on an album for an artist by a record company, meaning that they had to shell out the money to get the rights for those songs. You can't just go and record an album without getting permission from the songwriter.
Exactly.
And some of these songs are like to get Yesterday in a song is $1 million.
There you go.
It's $1 million to use it. And I think you have to only use, you can't use a whole song. You can only use
like a snippet of it.
Yeah. And it's like $1 million just to use the actual song. You know what I mean? Matter of fact, you can't even grab your guitar in a song, in a film and sing it. You know, just sing it in the background without the permission of the you know, without paying, obviously.
Amazing.
So this is something that's really, really to me a big where to look. You know, because I think this show, you know, what we do here, we try to entertain, educate, and call to action, kind of motivate to do your own research and then maybe and reach out to us and let us know, hey, you missed this or this was wrong or
absolutely.
You know, these kinds of things. And really, this is the information that, and this is the disparity between what they think is a catchy song, right? If you think, okay, if a song is so catchy and it's the top 20 catchy songs of all time, shouldn't they be the most covered songs of all time? Wouldn't people generally want to cover the most catchiest song that has catched everybody or has coited everyone?
True.
Right?
True.
Right? Why are we looking at Blowing in the Wind as one of the most covered songs of all time by Bob
Dylan? You have a good point.
You know what I mean?
That's a fair point.
Yeah. So this is part of our conversation. So, wow, we're at hour. This is the longest show we've ever done.
Yes.
We're rock and rolling here. Well, there's our show, ladies and gentlemen. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us. It's been always a joy for us to have these conversations. These are
good. Let us know what you think, by the way.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Keep us posted on that and let us know what you find. And if you find any articles, you can always email them to us. Cause that's something that we like to check out. Yep. You can email it to me, John Henry Soto at protonmail.com, or you can message me there with any other suggestions or ideas. We're going to be doing these on Thursday nights with different topics. And this will be us kind of like riffing on certain subjects. Today we wanted to riff on the music industry, but not just riff on it because we don't want to be like just complaining little weenies. We want to actually bring a point that's valid and to have the discussion continue.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And that to me is like the key thing. So
exactly.
So we'll be doing this on Thursday. So I want to thank you all for tuning in. Appreciate y'all. Have a wonderful night. I'll see you all on Tuesday night for our counterparts interview show. And we'll see you there. And as always, peace.
Almost messed it up.